You've worked hard to build your brand, so why settle for one-size-fits-all branded clothing? Lands' End Outfitters creates apparel your employees will truly want to wear that unites your team in comfort and style. It's clothing that bolsters your brand identity and creates a unique connection between your brand, your employees, and your customers. It's why Lands' End Outfitters has been a supplier of branded apparel to some of the world's most respected brands for more than 30 years. From logo polos to fully customized branded wardrobes, our world-class outfitters will partner with you to help you and your team feel confident on the job and put your brand into action. From logo application to online ordering, Lands' End Outfitters offers seamless solutions that give you peace of mind, all backed by above and beyond expertise. See why Lands' End Outfitters should be your branded apparel partner. Go to business.landsend.com/pod20 and use code POD20 for 20% off your first product. That's business.landsend.com/pod20. Code POD20 for 20% off your first product.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
We're going to talk transport. I'm joined by transport commentator and CEO of the RIAC, Conor Faulkner. Conor, good morning.
Good morning, Pat. Hi.
Now, lots of things to talk about today. Yeah. First of all,
a few things going on.
Guard. The taxes in the post.
The taxes in the post. This is the tax disc. And I lobbied on this years ago, Pat. In fact, you and I had conversations about this in the past. Your windscreen tax disc isn't worth a curse. It actually facilitates fraud more than it prevents it.
You can photocopy them.
You can fake them. I mean, since the days of colour photocopiers, these things have been out of date. And from time immemorial, the only check a guard was able to do was to shine a torch on the piece of paper through the wet windscreen and see if your tax was in date or not. As I say, it facilitated fraud more than prevented it.
Now, if a guard looks closely at the tax disc, he can marry the reg and so on and so forth, and that'll be fine. But mostly, they just look at the colour and the month.
Yeah, and it just a quick visual check, which is obviously not good enough. Nowadays, that's completely superseded by the database and the technology, and that's clearly, obviously, the way we should go. And as I say, we lobbied for this change to be brought about, I'm thinking 10 years ago, but it will now be facilitated in law. This is a piece of legislation that came announced by government yesterday, good news, I guess.
Yeah. So it means that when a vehicle approaches, its number plate will indicate if the guard that uses the technology, whether it's taxed or insured.
Yeah, well, the insurance is a separate database, but that now works too, although some commercial vehicles are missing from it. But modern world, yes, the camera in the guard car reads the registration plate, and the guard then in front of their nose has all of the relevant information, including whether it's insured and who's insured to drive it, because, it might be an insured car, but you're not on it, and they should have all of that information. A little overdue, but definitely an improvement.
Okay, so there's still that little loophole, as you say. The car is insured, it's on the database, but who's behind the wheel?
Yeah.
So, unless the guard has a reason to be suspicious of you,
you might still get some, wolves among the sheep. But if there's a smaller and smaller number, and you can't get away with it so ridiculously easily, as has been the culture for a long time, then that's got to be an improvement.
Now, speaking of technology, these self-driving cars, and there are different levels of self-driving facilitated by different models of car. But there's some kind of depressing news about the autonomous driving.
Yeah, well, this is from the University of Nottingham, and they've published a study which shows that level 3 autonomy, so if you forget the geek speak for a minute, this is cars we kind of have at the moment. They do a lot themselves. Yeah. So they'll stay in lane, they'll stay back from the car in front. They could actually theoretically, drive you from Redcow to Cork and you have your arms folded. But you're supposed to stay alert and intervene if the
car
needs you.
And often the car has a technology where you have to touch it every so often.
Yeah.
Exactly. To make sure it
can prompt the driver to stay on the case. Now, what the study showed was, with that degree of autonomy, it's nearly the worst of both worlds. The driver doesn't concentrate. Drivers do things like look at screens, read work emails, play chess even in one of the cases, and because they're relying on the car. And when the car beeps and says, I want help, I need human intervention, then at that point, the human being is very inefficient. So if you picture the scene of, somebody's cruising down to Cork, they've had no problem for an hour, and suddenly something happens and the car wants the driver to intervene. They don't do so quickly or alertly, so they'll weave in lane, they'll brake suddenly, they'll accelerate suddenly. So it turns out that level 3 of safety. So somewhere between the dumb car and the complete robot, level three is actually the most dangerous level. When cars are partially autonomous and we're relying on them, but still need the human occasionally, that's actually the most dangerous phase of autonomous cars.
I mean, they addressed this for motorway driving years and years ago when they decided that you couldn't have that straight, like in America, right across the desert, one straight line, because people fall asleep, people get bored.
Yes.
So they deliberately put in curves on motorways and, you know, they don't have them in a straight line, even though it might be possible in some cases.
Yeah,
so they're aware of tedium and how it can...
Very much so. And in Australia, for many, many years, fatigue was one of their big, big killers. Huge, big, long, straight stretches. And, you know, when you're relying on human beings, you're bringing in error. I still think the future is autonomous vehicles, but we're so paranoid about the safety standards of them now that we're essentially demanding airline level of safety from these vehicles before we're willing to allow them on the road. And they're probably already statistically safer than humans. The Americans are way ahead of Europe on that, by the way, where we don't have autonomous taxis in any cities in Europe. They're trying it in America.
Now, one of the concerns in the capital is the proposal from DCC to basically block all through traffic from this summer, from later on this summer. Business raised its head and said, no, hang on a second, you have never done a due diligence on this and how it might affect business. Like you did all your traffic.
All the traffic planning,
but not how the small business might be affected. Eamon Ryan has said, get on with it.
He came out with a strong statement yesterday, threatened to withdraw funds from Dublin City Council under their Pathfinder project funding if Dublin City Council didn't implement their traffic plan in full. And look, this has generated an awful lot of heat laterally because Dublin City Council have been plugging away on this for years, doing their transport studies and this, that and the other. But the general public doesn't notice that until it actually has an effect on the streets. And what's due to happen in August is essentially this pinch point of bus gates on Bachelor's Walk and Aston Quay, the practical effect of which will be to cut off cars from accessing or from going through Dublin City Centre. And the City Council thinks this is a great idea. It'll get the buses to run on time. It'll help us build our cycle lanes. And the City Centre traders are going, my God, you could wipe us out. City Centre retail is struggling mightily compared to your Dundrums and Liffey Valleys. Dublin City Centre is wounded economically at the moment post-COVID, and this could be a hammer blow. Now, I think the traders might be overstating it, or Dublin City Council might be overstating it, but it does frustrate me that, you know, why aren't the council listening to businesses?
Are in business.
Well, I don't know. They're supposed to be on the side of the city's economy. And I think
but there was a very interesting thing overnight about how we have more college educated cabinet ministers and so on, and our TDs, blah, blah. Do they reflect the ordinary person? And there's no doubt that in the Dáil, we have ordinary people who never went to college who are representing their constituents. That's great. But do you have any business people in the Dáil? Do you have any business people on the council?
Well, listen, a broader conversation, the large preponderance of solicitors and teachers and professions of that sort. You need greater representation. But look, Dublin City Council has an elected base. You know, there are council members, and that's as democratic as you could ask it to be. They have endorsed the traffic plan, but nobody either on the council itself or in the sort of technocracy of the city officials, the permanent officials, nobody seems to be listening to business. And in the name of God, why not? If you're not on the side of Dublin City Centre businesses, then whose side are you on? You are the City Council.
Now, they got 3,000 submissions when they looked for public consultation, and they say 80% were enthusiastic about their plans to block off Dublin City.
Yeah, and Eamon Ryan referenced that yesterday. He said there was overwhelming public support. Now, that is a huge stretch. I mean, that is just not the case. They received 3,000 submissions when they did their public consultation, and they said that they split 80% in favour, and they called that overwhelming public support. But sure, you know, there's plenty of flaws in that methodology. It's just not true. And if you ask members of the general public, they're generally unaware of, you know, the consequences of these changes until they come in.
Now, he had a go at the plan as well.
Yeah, now, this is a different point he was making. But look, Dublin City Centre has not really recovered from COVID. And I love Dublin City Centre. As I said, we have a business in here. I've worked in here for over 30 years. It is my city. There's a reason why tourists love it. It's a brilliant, brilliant place. But retail in particular has really suffered post-pandemic. There aren't as many people in the city because of remote working. It's got priorities. We need to get residences built above shops. There's plenty of enough space to address our housing crisis in unoccupied spaces above. We need to turn those into residential. We need to stimulate trade and business within the city centre, and we need to address transport. But I think the accusation is the city council is so blinkered with its transport plan that it's putting more thought into bicycle lanes and buses than it is to the suffering economic heart of Dublin City. So I accept that the transport plan is important. But if you're not listening to the city centre businesses, in the name of God, why not? Who are you listening to?
Now, what was he saying, though, about the planning of the city?
Well, he said that corrupt planning he attributed to, but he said that the city centre has lost out to peripheral developments like Liffey Valley and Dundrum and others. And he said that essentially the DNA of those, they arise out of corrupt and poor planning going back. And look, that's a very big conversation. It is true that some horrendous planning decisions have been made in Dublin City Centre historically, and some were nakedly corrupt.
And we know that one planner was actually given a jail sentence, which he managed to avoid.
Yeah.
There was one planner, but there was a lot more to be concerned about in the planning board than that one individual.
It's a sorry legacy, and it goes back 20, 30, 40 years, and it reflects no credit on Dublin City at all and elsewhere in the country. But look, you can't blame the recent turndown of Dublin City Centre post-pandemic on those historic planning decisions. Maybe we're still suffering the consequences of them, but it's not what's new in Dublin City now. What's new is that post-pandemic work patterns have reduced the numbers of people physically in the city centre, so it's a quieter place than it used to be. Retail is taking a hammering, and Dublin City Centre, thinking only of its transport plan, thinking bicycles and buses mean victory, seem to regard leaving, you know, something of a retail desert behind them in Dublin City Centre as a price worth paying. And, you know, that's a debate you could have, but I'm convinced there isn't overwhelming public support for it.
Now, Regina Doherty, a former cabinet minister, former senator, now MEP, has had a right go about cycle lanes.
Yeah, she has. Look, I think she was just plain wrong. She had referenced previously that, you know, cycle lanes were authoritarian in nature and prescriptive, and, you know, it's a slightly bizarre thing to say. And in reversing out of that OTT comment, she said she's stuck by the sense of it and that cycle lanes are being imposed and are dividing communities.
She said, I worded it clumsily the first time, but authoritarian cycle lanes have divided towns.
Yeah, well, I think she worded it clumsily the second time as well. I can't understand the point she's making, unless it's a more general, you know, cycle culture is getting prescriptive. Look, I think she's just plain wrong. Let me be clear about that. And I think the city has to invest in cycle lanes. I think they're a good investment. I think they improve the city. I'm a cyclist myself. I cycle a lot. Cyclists have plenty of criticisms of cycle lanes around how they're designed. They're good ones, they're bad ones. Seems to take them ages to build them. Some are rubbish, some are brilliant. But generally speaking, building them is a really good idea. And this is a false division, Pat. You know, cyclists versus car users versus bus users versus the council. It's a completely false division. We need to embrace them, we need to build them more. We need to build more of them, and we need to build.
But there's limited road space in Dublin, which was originally a medieval city.
Yeah.
In its construct, unlike places like Paris, that got a complete rebuild and wide avenues and so on. We don't have those. So what they're saying is, we have a lane for the bus, we have another lane for the cycle. We have to facilitate huge numbers of pedestrians. And that leaves no room for the man in the white van.
And you almost feel that that's the purpose, you know, dressed up as a side effect. They're taking away a traffic lane, a car lane, out of spite, and then justifying it. Saying
it was an experiment in London near the museum area of central London.
Yeah,
and they had this stretch of road where it was open season. Everybody, pedestrians, cyclists, motorists, all shared the same space without sidewalks, without pavements.
The concept is naked streets.
Yeah.
And there were a couple of experimental Dutch things that did the same thing as well. And it turns out it is a nice mixed space. It can work quite well.
It means everyone has to be on their guard
all the time.
Everyone vigilant.
Yeah.
Pedestrians, everybody.
Yeah, and it's an extremely naturally slow-paced setting. So cars can't speed and don't speed. It's unnatural for a car to travel fast in that environment, which is great. I'll tell you something else that's interesting, particularly immediately post-pandemic when streets were deserted. The fact that there were no cars at all on Dublin streets, you know, didn't turn it into a lovely picnic space, as seems to be envisaged by planners. It actually made it menacing. It was unnaturally quiet. People would walk the street thinking, well, in normal circumstances, you know, there would be cars. It just didn't have the effect. It made the city really, really quiet, eerily so. And as I say, we want a vibrant and buzzing city centre. That has to be the city council's priority. Transport cannot be its only priority. You could get rid of every car in Dublin city centre, just ban them all and claim a climate and carbon victory of some sort. But what you would be doing to the city centre would be damaging it economically. And the city council has to at least be giving that as much thought as
now,
its bicycle
If you want
lanes.
To get across the Liffey from Dublin south side, currently people go down by Westland Row into Pier Street and across the bridge. And that's one way across. The other way is the East Link.
Yeah.
The East Link will be the only way to get across, or maybe the Samuel Beckett Bridge, which is bizarrely organised so that you're forced really onto the toll bridge.
Yeah, or indeed the M50, which is your alternative
that's,
route.
That's not an alternative.
No.
It's not a green alternative because the amount of petrol and diesel use getting out there, that's nonsense.
And it is a very busy piece of infrastructure.
But here's the rub. If you want to get across to the airport, for example, you would take the Merrion Road, then onto Sandymount along Beach Road, which is an amenity, you know, beachside amenity, Strand Road and all of that. Then you cut onto Sean Moore Road, where Johnny Ronan and other companies presumably are building a massive town. It's a vertical town, but thousands and thousands of people are going to live on that road in this new development at the Glass Bottle site when it's finally open. There's a single lane in either direction for all this traffic, be it trucks, vans, cars.
Yeah.
There are two cycle lanes that have been constructed. And I wonder, again, going back to planning, what kind of planners allowed this new development to eat up all the space within the site for housing and therefore no possibility of widening the road to accommodate all comers?
It's a good question. And what will the consequences be when that's full and it's a traffic generator? And I guess it's another example of that lack of joined up and strategic thinking. But I tell you one thing that I can't let the opportunity pass, Pat. Build a metro. I mean, that journey you described there doesn't exist in other cities. They take their metro system for exactly that traffic requirement. In a sense, sort of demanding of the consumer that everybody changes their patterns and, you know, don't drive a car anymore, everybody get on a bicycle, your bus service is improving, which it is. All of this is essentially tinkering. Dublin City, we hope, is going to be here for another 1,000 years. It is going to need a metro system. Every year we put that off, it goes up in price. Best time to do it was 30, 40 years ago. Successive governments have said they will. We've gotten nowhere. Build the shagged metro system. Barcelona, Madrid, Nice, cities comparable to us, decided to do it and 10 years later they had it open. Get on with it and it will address a lot of the problems.
Now, some of the texts coming in. Should we not be moving to a model where the car is just insured as an open drive unless the driver is disqualified for some reason? That's from Dave in Kerry.
Well, no, because...
In America, if you're visiting friends or whatever, they say, here's the keys, off you go.
And that is almost true here. If you have a standard insurance policy, you probably have driving other cars. That means I can borrow your car with your permission, Pat, provided you have an insurance policy on it, and the same thing sort of happens.
Yeah. The other thing is self responsibility for a tip.
Yes.
So if you're responsible or not, you pay for your damage, he pays for his. And that kind of works out in the wash, really, in the end. The insurers kind of balance it out.
Yeah, well, we have a different construction here in Ireland, which is if
liability.
I'm responsible for the crash, I'm liable for the damage arising, which you could call that fair, or you could say it cripples us a bit.
Would it not be a good idea to give traffic wardens the same technology as Gardaí to check tax and insurance?
You could, in theory, you could use it, deploy it in all sorts of places, including all of the CCTV cameras that watch traffic, the M50 toll camera, for example. In theory, every single camera could read the reg plate and tell the guards. You'd get good out of that, but it's slightly sinister and it's a bigger conversation.
Motor tax discs, why are we not also removing NCT and DOE discs at the same time, as they're all digitally available?
Yeah, I believe the plan will be to do just that. And the NCT likewise has a database which the guards can read.
Okay. Dublin City Council continue to quote high public support for their traffic plan, but this is based on a public consultation which is heavily promoted online by the pro-cycling groups. So they swamped the consultation. DCC should be required to have an independent poll to gauge accurately the level of support.
Well, you know, they should want to know. They should want to know. You shouldn't be constructing research. That is, what's the old joke that your people use research the way a drunk uses a lamppost, more for support than illumination?
Yeah. And why is this a self-selecting sample.
Exactly. And why are they cherry-picking that to favour their policy? Do they not surely want to genuinely know? And if Dublin businesses are screaming their concerns, why would you not listen?
Dublin city centre businesses don't belong to a constituency. We have no elected representative. It'll be great when all the businesses close down in the city centre, as no one will need to go in anymore, totally solving the traffic problem.
Well, there you go. If you pursue the logic to its conclusion, you know, there are some people who would literally call that victory. But I don't think the rest of us would. And certainly I don't think there's overwhelming support for it.
The transport plan is to discourage cars travelling through the city,
yes,
not cars travelling to the city. The car lobby, disguised as a retail lobby, chooses to ignore this. Oh, that's from Gordon.
Which am I then? This is a Monty Python scene.
No, the whole idea that to get through, people think you're going maybe from the south side of Dublin to the north side of Dublin. You might simply want to cross the Liffey with goods, like you're a plumber. You need to repair plumbing in a cafe on the north side, and you've just done a job in the cafe on the south side. You have a short journey to get across. How the hell do you get across?
Well, look, the logic behind it is that 60% more even, but about 60% of the traffic that is coming into Dublin city centre does not have a destination within the city centre. It's transiting through. That's the sort of we do have a massive transport problem, and Dublin City Council is right about that. A lot of those journeys are wasteful. Sometimes, in many cases, the physical presence of those vehicles inhibits the bus service, and there's tremendous logic to that. That is also a problem that has to be faced. Dublin City has a huge transport challenge. This may be the solution. It may be a really important part of the solution. But as I say, transport is not the only problem that the city has.
Okay.
And the council surely should be aware of that.
In Cork, I'm told some bike lanes in Cork City are a death trap. You're driving and swinging left, and the bike lanes are on your left. Well, normally they are, aren't they?
Yeah, I use the Dublin ones a lot, and you know, they are imperfect. Even shiny new ones that they've spent a fortune on. As a cyclist, I'd have plenty of criticisms, and some of them are just downright nuts. But it is good to have cycle lanes, and it's worth spending money on them.
A few more comments. It's nice, at least, that DCC is sending alerts out about new bus and cycle lane works they're doing. At least I know when the road is being ripped up for a change. That's from Dave in Clontarf. And Dave in Clontarf has been put through the ringer for the last couple of years with the work there. Cyclists don't obey the law. Delivery drivers and couriers break lights all the time. Why people don't admit this, I've no idea. Just sit on any junction and count how many break the lights. And the answer is loads. That's from John. Councillor Neil Ring has been on to us. Coming soon, the College Green Plaza. Dublin City Council does not care about the city centre economy or the threat to jobs in the city.
Yeah, well, look, that's the criticism. And I think it is incumbent on Dublin City Council to come out and, if you like, engage with those concerned voices rather than say they have overwhelming support. And it's not a surprise to me that we're hearing these voices now. Dublin City Council says, oh, we did consultation a couple of years ago. Where were you then? That's not human nature. People become engaged when they see the direct effect that it's going to have. And a lot of people have looked with horror at what is supposed to be implemented, you know, from next month. And as I say, the city centre traders are going, whoa, you'll wipe us out.
What they do is they do it in August when things are quiet, when there's no schools, people are on holidays. They do it then and say, isn't it working wonderfully? And then September comes and it...
Well, you know, as an engineer, Pat, you know, if you're implementing, that's when you would do it.
That's the best time because of the paucity of traffic. It doesn't mean that it's going to solve the problem. If it works in August, doesn't mean it works in October.
Yeah, that's true. And look, to some extent, let me not be too cynical. This could work. You know, it might be the case that they've got it right, or it might be that they can make specific adjustments. We know, for example, huge employers like Guinness's, for example, or Brown Thomas's.
Yeah, have they sorted that yet? How Guinness are going to get the porter down to the docks?
I'm told that they're engaged. What on earth that means, I do not know. But clearly, you know, if you announce a policy like this, which no matter what you think about transport, is going to have huge amounts of collateral consequences for lots and lots of people in the city, you have to measure twice and cut once.
Guinness tankers being driven down, the massive things down to the docks, straight line.
Yeah.
Imagine if they have to turn up into Broadstone or wherever. All those bends create more hazards for the cyclists because a truck going, say, straight is safer than a truck making perhaps an unsighted turn.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And look, we can achieve these things. By the way, you do it by achieving by building infrastructure. I remember when the trucks on the North and South Quays formed a solid wall of steel going to and from the port that blocked the city up completely. Build a port tunnel, transform the city centre. So, you know, it takes more to solve our transport problems than bus gates and bicycle lanes, or indeed than bus connects. We do need to build.
All right. Conor Faulkner, transport commentator, CEO of the RIAC. Thank you very much.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.
You've worked hard to build your brand, so why settle for one size all fits branded clothing? Lands' End Outfitters creates apparel your employees will truly want to wear that unites your team in comfort and style. It's why Lands' End Outfitters has been a branded apparel supplier to some of the world's most respected brands for more than 30 years. From logo polos to fully customized branded wardrobes, our world-class outfitters will partner with you to help your team feel confident on the job and put your brand into action, all backed by above and beyond expertise. See why Lands' End Outfitters should be your branded apparel partner. Go to business.landsend.com/pod20 and use code pod20 for 20% off your first product. That's business.landsend.com/pod20. Code pod20 for 20% off your first product.